Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up later this hour at 7:45. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Titans and the Raiders with him. We will get back into the Preds later this hour as well, and their win last night in their season opener. All that coming up here on the program. Joe Rexroad, the Vols back in action tomorrow, coming off the bye week, and they are taking on a team that got a win against them last year. An ugly game for Tennessee a year ago when they went to Arkansas and took on the Hogs. Arkansas also coming off a bye. They changed their coaches. Sam Pittman gets fired. Bobby Petrino rolling into Neyland Stadium tomorrow as the interim head coach for the Razorbacks. Joe, the last time we saw Arkansas, they got beat 56-13 by Notre Dame. Now, I will say this. You know, they've lost three games in a row, Ole Miss, Memphis, Notre Dame. Their offense, with the exception of the Notre Dame game, has looked pretty good throughout the year, right? Like, Taylen Green threw for 305 yards against Ole Miss. They put up 35 points in that game. He threw for 325 against Memphis. They put up 31 in that game. Like, they've got a dangerous offense and a quarterback that's a dual threat that's playing pretty well for the most part. So that's the one thing. And the other part of this that I think a lot of people are wondering about heading into this game. Look, Bobby Petrino, we know about his past, and he's a strange dude. But I think a lot of people feel pretty confident that he's going to have some wrinkles tomorrow to throw in there against Tennessee. And he's had the bye week to kind of work on that, all that as well. So it's a very fascinating game from the Arkansas standpoint tomorrow, Joe, because at least on offense, I'm not sure if Tennessee knows exactly what they're walking into on that one.
No, they're going to be challenged. Taylen Green's really good, and Bobby Petrino's good. Bobby Petrino's a good offensive coach. He's a good offensive coordinator, play caller. I think he's helped them. You know, it's like when they hired him back, first of all, it was like, are you serious? But also it was like, oh, so now Sam Pittman has Petrino helping him, but also kind of hovering over him as the potential guy who takes over. David from Arkansas, and anybody else who listens who's an Arkansas fan, I assume that you want no part of Petrino. I did a little message board thing. Looked like it's, you know, most of the fan base lives in reality and lives in 2025 and doesn't think it would be a good idea at all. But
it's because they all want Gruden.
Well, there's a healthy Gruden faction. There's a healthy Hugh Freeze is underappreciated at Auburn. Bring him here faction, and some other names too. But Petrino will, I fully expect Arkansas will have some nice wrinkles Saturday. Taylen Green is very talented. They have some skill, and they're going to score some points. Sam Pittman would still have his job if they didn't have two ridiculous late fumbles against Ole Miss and Memphis. I mean, yeah. I guess the Ole Miss, you have to go win the game, but that robbed them of a chance to win that game, and then they totally blew the Memphis game with those fumbles. I mean, you'd be looking at a different situation. Granted, the Notre Dame game was so ugly, but also when a team loses heartbreakers like that back-to-back, sometimes that can happen too, right?
Yeah.
And then you come up with a performance like you did against Notre Dame, but they're still a pretty potent team offensively. I mean, defensively, I think Tennessee is going to be able to go right up and down the field. But I do feel like you know, you got to make sure you score touchdowns and keep some separation, because I do think that the Arkansas offense is going to come up with some plays and some points.
Well, it's a big game for Tennessee's offense because, number one, you're at home. Hey, look, you know, they have played really well at home under Josh Heupel, and they have not had very many home stinkers under Josh Heupel. I mean, they haven't had very many losses in general at home under Josh Heupel. So a game for Tennessee's offense tomorrow where I think Arkansas's defense is vulnerable. It's a team that basically shut you down last year. So guys who were on the team at Tennessee remember that and are going to want to change that. And look, Tennessee's offense is different basically in every facet from what they did a year ago. Like last year, they couldn't throw the ball that well. This year, they throw it well. Last year, they ran the ball extremely well. This year, they're kind of struggling to run at the moment. So I'm interested to see if that changes tomorrow against Arkansas. But like Brazel, Matthews, Staley, they ought to cook in this game. So we'll see what happens on that front. I am, you know, we're going to get into a big picture SEC conversation here in just a second, and exactly where Tennessee fits into that. But like, if you're Tennessee, if you're Texas A&M, I mean, if you're Alabama, like, I don't know that there's like some elite team in the SEC, right? Like, everybody thought it was going to be Texas heading into the year. And if it wasn't going to be Texas, well, it was probably going to be Georgia. And if it wasn't going to be Georgia, it was probably going to be Alabama. And Alabama's playing really well right now. They got a big test this weekend too, coming up on the road at Missouri. So we'll see how all that goes. But like, if you're Tennessee, I think you're looking at things right now, Joe, and you're like, well, you lost a heartbreaker to Georgia. You feel like you should have won that game. You kind of screwed around a little bit in Mississippi State, and you were fortunate to you know, stay alive, come back, win that game. You had some calls go against you. You had some dumb plays early in the game that probably made that game a little bit closer than it should have been. But I still think if you're the Vols, you're looking around the rest of the landscape of the SEC right now, and you're thinking, man, we got a shot here. Like, we got a shot to really stick in this thing and make a run to Atlanta. Like, that should be what your mindset is right now if you're Tennessee, and you can't afford an absolute screw-up against Arkansas like you had a year ago. Like, this to me is, in some ways, Joe, it's not the same because of how extreme the 2022 South Carolina game was. But I remember thinking in 2023, when they played South Carolina at home that next year, I was like, they're about to go out there and kick their butt. And I kind of feel the same way about this. Like, everybody's talking about Petrino this week and how, you know, the wrinkles and what the offense is going to look like. And I have not been able to shake the feeling all week that Tennessee is going to absolutely destroy Arkansas, which makes me nervous as all get out heading into this game tomorrow, that I feel that way.
Yeah, well, I think it's way, way, way more likely that this is a complete laugher of a blowout than it is a game that's like down to the wire. I just, it's hard for me to, because like you said, the Josh Heupel road stuff, it's fair. There have been too many bad performances. They're pretty good at home. And especially, I mean, basically, unless they play Georgia, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've had pretty overwhelming success. And when they play a lesser team in Arkansas, certainly a lesser team, usually they handle that pretty well. And they have the stuff from last year to you know, give you a little bit extra. So I don't think you should be that nervous. But, I mean, look, Arkansas's offense is good enough that, you know, you mess around and, you know, you fumble one, you get a pass tip to the line, you give them extra possessions, and then, you know, that's where it could get kind of dicey. But your point on SEC is, it's really interesting because it's like at this point, most of the stuff that we talk about, I agree. I think Tennessee, I mean, the SEC race, the race for Atlanta is crazy.
Yeah.
It's almost, but also, like, if I'm one of these teams, I almost wouldn't mind just like having like maybe like missing out on a tiebreaker and not having to play that game, you know, but being in a strong position to get into the playoff.
Nah, they hadn't won it. They hadn't won an SEC championship since 98. Get in there, baby. Get in there.
That's true. It's probably, and that's the thing. It's probably, it depends on the fan base and the program, right? Because like a Georgia, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, it's cool. Atlanta's an hour away from us and we go there all the time. But yeah, like it would still be cool for Tennessee fans to finally be able to be back in Atlanta. What? The last time they were there, I think, was that terrible loss to LSU, right?
That 07.
Team was,
yep.
Oh, no, 07. I was thinking of the 01.
It was also a loss to LSU in 07.
Yes, but but the 0-1 loss to LSU was the killer. That was a national championship, good enough team. But yeah,
that Matt Mauch.
Yes,
good lord.
Who I covered in A ball, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, covered him in A ball. He came back out for a brawl after he got kicked off. Put on Carlos Zambrano's jersey. I wrote about it in the paper, and Oscar Acosta, the manager, banned me from the clubhouse for the rest of the year for selling him out, and came very close to punching me in the face for it.
How have I never heard this story? That's amazing.
Oh, I could tell you Oscar Acosta stories covering him all day. Made Izzo sound like, you know,
choir boy.
Exactly. Yeah. For some reason, yeah, like the Pope, you know, like. But yes, Matt Mauch, A-ball, Lansing Lugnut. And then all of a sudden, a couple years later, it's like, oh, Matt Mauch is a quarterback in LSU with Nick Saban. Okay, I didn't know Nick Saban was paying attention. He was a few miles away coaching college football. How about that?
Why do you feel like, and look, it's not been, you know, some linear thing here, but, you know, Tennessee didn't really run the ball all that well against Mississippi State until the overtime, right? Like overtime, you go heavy, you go bigger personnel, and it kind of felt like the Georgia overtime, right? With Georgia just handing it off and immediately getting down to the four. Like it's
entire
kind of
defense,
exactly what Tennessee did, except Bishop scored on the play. You know, they've had the three back approach, which I don't necessarily mind. I do think, like, you got to be, if you're Heupel, like, when you need big moments, like, who do you trust the most in the backfield? And, early in the year, I think it was definitely Star Thomas. You know, we'll see how that goes as the year plays out here. But are you concerned about Tennessee's running game and how difficult at times it has been for them so far this year?
Yeah, it's a good question. I just feel like in that game, it's almost like sometimes – because the Mississippi State does the same thing, they've got some better answers than other teams, you know, against what they do and face every day in practice. I think that is a really important thing this week. It does seem like, I mean, this offensive line, I think the numbers support it. Like, it's a better pass protecting offensive line, not as good a run blocking offensive line.
Yep.
But man, I still feel like, with the talent they have at running back, and, you know, now they have Sanders fully in the mix and everything, and the way that they're succeeding in the pass game, it doesn't make sense. Like, to me, there's a 250-yard rushing game coming against a pretty good team. Maybe it's this week.
Could be. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Vols and the Hogs coming up tomorrow in Neyland Stadium. Plus, we're going to get into it. How wide open is the SEC? Can Tennessee challenge for the SEC this year? How do we feel about where the conference is headed, as it's been a wild season up until this point? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. This Sunday, the NFL game of the week is the Cowboys taking on the Panthers at noon on Sports Talk 830. NFL game of the week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. Taking your thoughts on our phone to text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up later this hour at 7:45. Let's head to our phone line and welcome in Scott to the program. Scott, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Been listening to y'all for a while. This whole Arkansas versus Tennessee. One, I'm a lifelong Arkansas fan. I was born and raised in Little Rock, now I reside in Tennessee. Arkansas versus Tennessee at Arkansas, it was a doomed game from the start. Last time Tennessee beat Arkansas in Arkansas, I think I was 2 years old, and that was 92 or 93. And the whole thing with Bobby Petrino, it's going to be reflected off of how his record portrays. If he comes in, he does good. Arkansas is not going to care. They're going to forgive him. Arkansas is kind of known for forgiving with the whole Clinton issues, so I say, honestly, it's about his performance. I'm not offended by them bringing him back in. And I would honestly say I don't have high hopes for them to beat Tennessee at Tennessee with the way they've been playing and the defense the way that it is right now. But I would love for it to happen so I can just rub it in my boss's face again.
There we go.
So wait, let me ask you real quick. I don't think it's about being offended. It's just about thinking he's good enough to win. You think Bobby Petrino right now at this point is going to be a big time winning coach at Arkansas?
I mean, he was one of Arkansas's better coaches for his little stint there that he had in. And I mean, he went to have some success outside of Arkansas. So it's one of those that, could it be a boost to the offense, actually have an offensive play caller that's been there before and done that and knows what success is? Or is he going to be a washout? I mean, there's no really telling at this point since he's kind of been just on the sidelines and just playing at a lesser conference of schools. But, I mean, there's high hope there. But we'll see if the next few series of games, if he's still the old Bobby Petrino or he's just going to be back on the sideline and not allowed to have a Harley.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate the call. Yeah, Joe, right, stay off the bike. Kate, keep the neck brace off as well, even though it's an all-time photo.
Yep, someone shared it on the text line. Yeah, you always have to get that photo circulated. Yeah, I mean, like, I suppose. Yeah, I'm not like as embarrassing as it is and all that stuff. When it comes down to it, this is about winning. So I don't expect a school, a professional franchise, a fan base, anything to have some like put the moral bar higher than like winning or losing. I mean, let's live in the real world here, right? I just don't think. I mean, yeah, he had a heck of a stretch. That was a long time ago. And again, he's a good offensive coach, but like you're talking about starting a program, and I don't have it in front of me his age, but it's not, this would not be a super long-term thing. I don't know, it
He's
kind of boggles
64,
my
by the way.
mind. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think maybe, yeah, his best stretch was there, and he had some good stretch at Louisville. He also had this complete. Whatever the hell happened with the Atlanta Falcons, like a disaster on multiple fronts. I mean, there's more than the motorcycle stuff that's like a red flag about Bobby Petrino. But yeah, go win in Knoxville and all of a sudden start doing some crazy stuff here, and you can see how public sentiment could get swept up.
So, Joe, taking this to the SEC as a whole, how wide open is it? I mean, Alabama, you looked at the first game and it was like, wow, they just got smoked by Florida State. You got everybody calling for Kalen DeBoer to be fired down there, and they have rebounded nicely since then. Now, they're in the middle of a tough stretch right now. They handled Vanderbilt well. They got a road test in Missouri this weekend, and then they come right back home with Tennessee. So, can Alabama get through all that? We'll see what happens. Georgia, look, Georgia's good, but I think we've seen in the Tennessee game and in the Alabama game, certainly in the first half, like Georgia's defense has some flaws. Like it's not the same Kirby Smart defense to this point that we've grown accustomed to seeing. Everybody's preseason darling, doesn't even look like they're going to be a factor with Texas coming in. And I guess like John Mateer is going to give it a go to try to play this weekend
He's
against
probable.
Texas. So, I mean, he's a Heisman candidate if he's healthy. Oklahoma's got a legit defense. Texas A&M already with some big wins this year. So there's like, it feels to me, Joe, that there are legitimately, like, I don't know, eight teams that feel like they're in the mix here to maybe end up in Atlanta. Like legitimately, maybe nine. Like they're it's pretty, it feels wide open right now in the SEC. How do you view it?
Yeah, it's crazy. You have nine teams right now, this including Vanderbilt, that would probably be your ninth team, ranked between 4 and 20, from four Ole Miss to 20 Vanderbilt. That's wild. Between 4 and 20, so that's 17 spots, right? I think that's right.
Look
SEC
at
has
you.
nine. Yeah, how about that? I think I'm right. Not nine of them. And yeah, and you got great game. I mean, this week, huge game. Alabama at Missouri is a huge game, and I'm really intrigued by Missouri. Like we still got to see. I mean, they're 5-0, and there are much bigger tests starting Saturday coming for Missouri. But Bo Prabhula looks awfully good at quarterback. They again got in the portal and got a running back that no one had any idea who he, and all of a sudden he's just unbelievable for them. And so they're one of the pleasant surprises. Ole Miss to me is a pleasant surprise, especially when you lose your starting quarterback and look at what they're
Absolutely.
doing. Their defense looks legit. I mean, the disappointments are LSU and Texas, as you said. And I think maybe a little bit Georgia. Georgia is a little bit of a disappointment too. But like Tennessee's better than I thought. Vanderbilt better than I thought. Oklahoma probably better, like with Mateer, right? Like there were high
Yes.
hopes, but that's still better than I thought. And Texas A&M, I think, might be the best team. Like if you. I think Elko's a really good coach, and they have a legit defense. And that win at Notre Dame was big time. I don't care. We'll see what happens here with Notre Dame and all this stuff. I mean, they obviously have to win out, and if they do, I think they're probably in. But like, that's a big time. That's a good team, and that's a big time win on their home field. If everybody thinks Miami's legit, which I do, let's remember what Notre Dame did. They all very nearly won that game. So. Texas A&M win that game on the road. I know they've had some ups and downs offensively, but Marcel Reed is a special talent, as anybody from around here knows. And so I might look at them. They might end up being the best, but like the possible combinations in Atlanta and the huge number of all of these teams that have legitimate playoff hopes is pretty wild here on October 10th.
Oh, and strictly from the SEC point, like, yeah, Alabama dropped the opener against Florida State, not a conference game. So, like, from that standpoint, it doesn't really matter, right? Like, they're going to have their opportunity here in the SEC to handle their business. I think we're going to find out a lot about Missouri this weekend. How legit are they? I mean, you got a home game against Alabama. Look, Alabama's not going to be overlooking Missouri just because Tennessee's next week and it's the third Saturday in October and all that. So you're still talking about a ranked team on the road that you're going to play. But I am really interested with how good Alabama has looked the last couple of times out against Georgia and then against Vanderbilt. And in particular, how good Ty Simpson has looked. Big test for Missouri coming up this weekend to see if they're real. And then, like, Alabama, can you handle your business there? And, like, has your offense figured it out to the point where, with Bernard out there and Ryan Williams and Simpson playing the way they are, it just feels like an offense that's going to be really tough to handle the rest of the year. Like, defensively, Alabama looks a lot better. Like, they looked lost on defense against Florida State. Like, they had no answer for Malzahn, had no answer for anything going on out there. And it feels like they've stabilized there a little bit. Like, it's not the Alabama defenses from 09 or 12 or anything like that. I don't know if those are ever walking through the door again. But it's not an absolute just sieve out there like they look like they were against Florida State.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, look, Vanderbilt was a tough test for them. And when it came down to it, they played a lot of physical football. They had some mistakes for sure. And they gave up, the one long run and another really good touchdown drive, but really dominated the second half. Didn't let much go there. And they had some injuries too. So I think they are absolutely rounding into form. I mean, next, so I think they're dangerous. I think Ty Simpson he's turning into a little bit of a special player. And those receivers, I mean, Williams and Bernard, man,
Pretty good.
that's a pretty good combo. I don't know that there's a better tandem in college football. People don't realize how good Bernard is. I mean, there's so many huge games. Yeah, again, like Alabama, Missouri this week, of course, Texas, Oklahoma. I mean, next week you got LSU coming to Nashville. And like that to me is like, I mean, one of them is basically going to be relegated to, yeah, it's just not happening for you this year, I would say, But it might be Brian Kelly.
Well, and think about like next, there's some big games this weekend, obviously, but think about next week. You got Tennessee, Alabama. You got Vanderbilt, LSU. You have Ole Miss going on the road at Georgia. Like,
Yeah.
there are some massive games coming up next week in the conference. Like, it's a huge weekend next weekend for the SEC. We're going to find out a lot over the next couple weeks.
It's going to be carnage, is what it's going to be. And then we're going to get into a situation where, because the SEC did, other than you mentioned the loss to Florida State, that was a tough one. But overall, the SEC performed extremely well against the other conferences, on top of all that we're seeing right now and all the good. So, like, you are going to see multiple, again, SEC teams to me that have three losses that probably have a case. And they're going to be compared to like one loss teams that played way less stringent schedules. And it's going to be really interesting this year to see if all the talk and all the emphasis on schedule strength matters more.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Got a big story in sports that I want to get Joe's thoughts on coming up next. We will do that. Plus, we will get back into the Preds season opening win last night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Rex Rant coming up at 7:45. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game.
On Brugler, he actually has him fourth. He has him as a first, second round grade and number 30 overall. I mean, I think that's got to be largely about the injury. You're talking about a microdiscectomy.
Ugh.
By the way, I didn't even realize this. He also has had a torn ACL in the past and sciatica symptoms from lifting weights that required a different surgery. So two surgeries plus an ACL.
What was that last word?
Sciatica. Sciatica, and I may be totally butchering that, symptoms from lifting weights.
You probably
sciatica.
Are.
Yeah,
Oh my gosh, it's sciatica. Oh my god, I'm an idiot. Oh my gosh. I should have to sit in the corner for the rest of the show.
Sciatica.
Sciatica. What a moron I am. Right. I had no idea that's how you spell sciatica.
There we go.
One of the best moments in the history of the program.
That was an extended cut of the conversation there.
I know. I enjoy it. I think it's the best thing ever. And now, sciatica, sciatica, however you want to say it, rearing its ugly head again in the world of sports. Joe, we've been tagged in this a lot, so I figured we might as well address it. LeBron James missing the season opener for the Lakers and will be reevaluated in 3 to 4 weeks because he is dealing with sciatica on his right side. This is his 23rd NBA season. He's an old man now at this point, and sciatica affecting LeBron James heading into training camp into the regular season for the LA Lakers. So 3 to 4 weeks from now, we'll have to evaluate King James once again for sciatica. Joe, your thoughts?
Well, I just wonder if it's more the skia or the tika. You know, it's either one can be a little bit worse than the other. So haven't heard anything on that front. Yeah, appreciate the people making sure that we saw that. That's very, very kind of you to make sure. I kind of feel like LeBron is owed this, some kind of an injury after the decision too, but it was like a Hennessy ad or something.
He made a lot of people mad with that one. Man. Boy, did he make some people mad.
So when this initially ran, they were actually trying to sell like this is actually like some sort of career choice thing from LeBron.
I think so. Yeah.
That's pretty bad, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad. So I don't wish sciatica on anybody, but I mean, that's – come on, man. Come on. But I hope he gets better. And also, if we're doing news Thursday, rest in peace, Sister Jean.
Yes.
Sister Jean has passed away 106 years old. Pretty incredible. Worked all the way, like, until a few weeks ago. So pretty amazing.
Yep, no doubt about that. Joe, we began the show by discussing the Predators' win against the Columbus Blue Jackets. They went 2-1 last night, 37 saves for UC Saros, so that was good to see in the game last night. He looked awesome in the game. So, obviously, I mean, look, we've had a long-standing conversation about UC Saros, and, it's a season-long thing. We're going to see how the season goes, but a good start for Saros last night. And, you know, you're missing some guys in the lineup. Nick Hague, one of their big trades they made in the offseason, did not play last night. He's beginning the season on injured reserve. But you did have Brady Martin making his NHL debut, playing on a line with Forsberg and O'Reilly. I thought Martin looked okay. I thought, you know, there were some moments where, I mean, you're going up against Sean Monahan and Kirill Marchenko and their line, and that's a pretty good line that they're going up against. So he got overwhelmed a few times out there. But all in all, I mean, 18-year-old, he didn't look lost. He didn't look out of place out there. So all in all, I think you're happy with that if you're the Predators. And I'm interested to see how it goes from here. Like, are they going to give him 9 games? Are they going to give him a few more games? Does he have a chance to actually stick around and hang with the team all year as an 18-year-old? I mean, that's going to be one of the big early season storylines because, I mean, they do have some roster spots they're going to have to figure out, right? Like, Luke Evangelista at some point is going to get the immigration part of this done, and he'll be back in the lineup. You know, Matt Wood was out there yesterday at the morning skate participating. So, like, he's not that far away from playing and being ready to go. So, they're going to have some decisions coming up as to what to do with their lineup. But, look, Joe, bottom line is, you know, regardless of how it looks, and it wasn't perfect, it wasn't always pretty, they played well in the third period. But, you know, when you're coming off a season last year that was basically doomed from the start with how bad you started at 0-5, and you just felt like you were in total panic mode the whole time, starting off on the right foot with a win, pretty good. Pretty big deal for the Predators, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge to not immediately be in a hole. And I understand it'd be a one-game hole or a one-game leg up. It's one freaking game of 82. But I think it's big, and I think it's a big opportunity for them to try to, like, actually get rolling right away and have a good record and be – one of the early, you know, pleasant talking points around the league, as opposed to just make everything the opposite of last year. Expectations were huge. I mean, someone was texting earlier, like, why are the expectations down? Same guys. Huge expectations a year ago. Yeah, then we watched them play all year, and we were like, oh, no, we were totally dead wrong about this. So a total 180 in expectations from talking about how deep can they go in the playoffs to no one thinks they have a shot to get to the playoffs. And the total 180 of that should be some kind of an edge for the group, along with just a lot of prideful guys who have played a lot of high-level hockey in this league who were miserable last year and want a completely different experience. So that's you got to win the first one to, you know, to kind of get that ball rolling. And I think it's, even though maybe it wasn't, you know, some revelation of a performance or whatever, Saros was really good. O'Reilly had a sweet goal in the power play.
Yep.
Like you said, you got the young guy out there, and he hung in there okay. And, yeah, it seems like, I mean, the defense core is better, right? I mean, that's the expectation. And maybe we're instantly seeing evidence of that too.
Well, here's another thing that we didn't talk about to begin the show that's going to be, you know, just extremely important for them this year. You know, Josi playing for the first time since February the 25th. He has the POTS diagnosis in the offseason. And, you know, I thought kind of like everybody else, he was easing into the game and, you know, got overwhelmed a couple of times out there. And in the third period, I was watching and I'm like, man, that looks like Roman Josi out there. And, you know, he's 35 years old. He's dealing with a POTS diagnosis. Played a lot of hockey in his career. But third period, he looked pretty darn good, man. And that was good to see. Now, can he keep that up throughout the year? What's the schedule? And, you know, it's an Olympic year, so it's a very condensed schedule, right? Like, you're basically in the month of February, you're taking three weeks off from the NHL schedule. So they're going to be playing a lot of back-to-backs, a lot of every other days. Like, well, how do you handle that if you're Josi and the Predators? But third period last night, he looked pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge deal. And again, that's one of those. Everything is, it's one of 82, but that one is certainly, I mean, it's like, it's going to be lingering and looming. I guess maybe you get a couple months in the season and there's nothing that happens and he's playing well, you forget about it. But I mean, it's going to be a storyline all year, right? And the idea of like a full, you know, full and healthy season for Roman Josi, at this point, that would be a huge development. And then what would that mean for the Preds?
Yeah. And does he have one more, like, again, beyond the POTS diagnosis? He's 35, right? So that's when you start to see it go the other way a little bit. Does he have one more year left in him of maybe not Norris Trophy level play, but, you know, elite defenseman level play? Because to me, like, if he does, that's a big deal. Like, that's a big deal for this team if he's got that. There's a long list of things that they need to happen this year if they're going to get back in the playoffs in the Western Conference that is just going to be absolutely freaking loaded this year. But that would be near the top. Like, if they get, you know, one of those seasons out of him, that'd go a long way.
Yeah, and with the other improvements, I mean, that's certainly – we talked extensively, repeatedly – over and over again about Saros and the deal and all that stuff last year. And like there's not like he didn't have a good year, but that part of it is certainly like it's still hard to quantify when you are questionable in front of a goalie like that and you have the issues they had. Like, even what does that, to speaking of like psychology, what does that do psychologically to a goalie? You know, if he feels like things are shored up and they're going to be more solid and, you know, probably play more of like a, I don't know. You tell me, is this team going to have to be a little bit more like a Barry Trotz kind of team,
yeah,
you know, to win hockey games? You know, I don't know, but to be more sound and solid, you know, in the D zone, got to be could be a potentially big deal for him.
By the way, if you're a hockey fan, go check out how the San Jose Sharks lost a game last night. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Jack Eichel had a dump in from center ice that Alex Nedeljkovic, the Sharks goalie, let sneak in by him from the dump end to tie the game up with like a minute left after they had just missed an empty netter the other way. And then in overtime, Nedeljkovic tries to go play the blue line, go play the puck as the goalie at the opposing blue line in there, misses on the pass, and Vegas gets the wide open tap in for the empty net. An all-timer last night for the San Jose Sharks. So if you missed it, go check it out. You'll want to see it. We'll have the Rex Rant.
And they know how to lose.
Yes, they do. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. TD coming up at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant. Now on Robbie and Rexroad.
A lot of people are asking about the gout.
If you're hanging out with a bunch of guys with gout, Joe needs to tie into your group. Yes.
I don't remember a lot about exactly what happened, but I remember coming around the curve.
And I do think this offensive line is built to pound.
Borderline erotic.
Let's monitor my tone.
That's why I was just going out on a Sunday night after dinner, short ride.
We had a love fest. We all kind of gathered around. We hugged each other.
It's that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Mr. Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Well, I'm glad you got Karski in there. I've got the nerve. The butterflies are already building for me. Tigers, Mariners, Game 5. Tarek Skubal on the mound tonight. It's the main event. Remind me, when do the Yankees play again? Kaharski, are you listening? When did the Yankees play again? I missed that on my TV listings.
April Fool's Day. They must
play tomorrow. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. That's stupid. Well, Kaharski, you settle in tonight and watch a team that's still in the playoffs. As I again talk trash about the Tigers that I totally gave up on the other day when they were down 3-0 and was completely shocked to see them come back and force a game 5. But today, I think I need to get into the we've had some people text about this for a while, the Super Bowl halftime show controversy. Bad yes. Bunny is the choice, which has made people very, very angry. But I gotta say, man, and look, I'm not a Bad Bunny fan. I know that Bad Bunny is a very popular, he's got hot Billboard Hot 100 number one hits and stuff like that. It's not my cup of tea. People are really upset about it. I'm not going to get into all the political garbage that goes along with everything that happens in the world. But, I understand this would be 2 years in a row. Like last year, Kendrick Lamar is amazing, but I don't know that Kendrick Lamar is a great halftime show choice. So I go back to like The Weeknd. I mean, I'm not a big Weeknd fan either, but actually I thought that was kind of a good show. And it was one of those things where it was like, oh yeah, I know that song. Oh, I know that song. It was kind of like a weird show with the maze and everything. But that was like, it's the kids, right? The kids, I think, like this stuff. But I still think that the better choice is to do things that are more accessible to, especially if you can do it generationally, like the Dre, Snoop, Eminem. I mean, Mary J. Blige, like that one, I think that was pretty sweet. Now, granted, I'm of a certain age, but I thought that was pretty sweet. So I don't know if Bad Bunny, is a great choice, but he's obviously very popular, and it's, Usher was 2 years ago, Rihanna. They've had a lot of these solo artists. I mean, my God, like, where was the outrage when Maroon 5 got the freaking Super Bowl? Maroon 5!
Yeah, Blink 182 got robbed that year.
Yeah, I mean, I actually would go for Blink 182. They, first of all, for people who don't know the history, I mean, they really didn't even start doing, it was still like marching bands like through the 80s, basically. Then there was like Chubby Checker came in. I think like one of the first ones where it was like was when they had freaking New Kids on the Block in 91, okay? And Cot B was like kind of ushered in. And then you have some of these, Gloria Estefan, you've got like Patti LaBelle, Teddy Pendergrass, Tony Bennett, Arturo Sandoval, and Miami Sound Machine all together. Like some of these ridiculous halftime shows where you have like, again, Boyz II Men, Smokey Robinson, Martha Reeves, Temptations, Queen Latifah. At least that's like thematically the same thing, but you've had like Aerosmith. It was like Aerosmith and NSYNC together. What?
Sick.
Aerosmith and NSYNC. The best ones are like, again, it depends on what kind of music you want, but like U2. That was awesome. Paul McCartney, The Stones, Prince, Tom Petty, Springsteen, The Who, like that run to me, and even like a Madonna and a Beyonce, like that makes sense. I don't know if Bad Bunny quite measures up to that, but we have a new story, and I know it's Mike Florio, who is, and I apparently, you know, Mike Johnson suggested this, but like Lee Greenwood is the, you know, there's a strong push from Lee Greenwood to replace Bad Bunny. Like, I'm sorry, but like, hey, just like anybody else in the mid 80s, you know, and I'm proud to be an American. That's a
great
fine song. 40 some years ago. Does anybody know another song? Like, is he going to play that song six times in a row? Lee Greenwood. And let's do it one more time, everybody. I mean, what are we talking about here? Yeah. You know, Bad Bunny, man, I obviously we're talking super, super high commercials. I've seen him on Saturday Night Live. You know, it was whatever. It's just not my cup of tea. I think the outrage might be a little out of hand. And no, we do not need Lee freaking Greenwood to replace him.
I got a suggestion for you. And I guess this could only, I guess, really happen if the Colts are the team in the Super Bowl. Let's get our guy in there. Let's get Seth, who sings the Colts song, in there every week and let him do the halftime show. I'd watch.
I would watch. I mean, I would watch. There is no doubt. By the way, Kendrick Lamar was apparently the most watched halftime show of all time. I mean, I don't know if that means anything.
Doesn't that happen every year, though?
Yeah, you know. People are upset about it. Like Kendrick Lamar is basically, like, to me, it'd be like the rock equivalent. You know, Radiohead might be my favorite band of all time. I love Radiohead. But, like, I wouldn't necessarily, like, think of Radiohead for a Super Bowl halftime show. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you got to be, you know, you got to be accessible to the masses. So maybe.
Let's get the Dave Matthews Band out there.
I'm free. Oh, well. I mean, they've totally screwed that up. That could have been. I mean, they can play one song. They just play one version of Two Step, and it'll, like, be the longest halftime show of all time.
It's like, well, I'm here for it. We'll resume the game tomorrow. Thank you.
It's a huge miss by them, actually.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Teron Davenport will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the matchup between the Titans and the Raiders. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.